May I be an instrument of peace. 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 That's the whole song. If you'd like to sing along with me, please do. May I be an instrument of peace. 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 May I be an instrument of one more song for you before I start to talk. This song is called Forgiveness. It's by a local songwriter, Helen Greenspan. And just however it lands is fine. Like whatever it brings up for you, completely fine. For all we leave imperfectly, I see forgiveness for hurts unhealed, love unrevealed, for all that remains unfinished. I wrap it in kindness and hold it in peace and sing forgiveness, forgiveness. For all we leave imperfectly, I sing forgiveness. For hurts unhealed, love unrevealed, for all that remains unfinished, I wrap it in kindness and hold it in peace and sing forgiveness, forgiveness. The word Kanti, transliteration of a Pali word, which in English we spell K-H-A-N-T-I, Kanti, translates as forgiveness and also as patience. Pali is the language that was spoken in North India during the time that the Buddha was alive. This quality, Kanti, forgiveness or patience, is considered by Buddhism, taught by the Buddha, to be the highest virtue. And that's quite an honor, because the Buddha recognized energies in the universe and recognize that some of us, some of these energies support well-being and some support suffering. And to name Kanti, your forgiveness, as the supreme virtue, the most, the highest form of a practice that we can engage in, an energy that we can engage with that will bring well-being, is quite a statement and something to think about. And I would like to propose to you that the primary reason that we don't engage with or practice this energy of forgiveness is innocent ignorance, a misunderstanding about what this energy actually is and what it actually provides, and also a misunderstanding about what it is not. So I want to speak tonight about what is forgiveness, why would we choose to practice it, and finally, how would we practice it? And there's a lot of literature out there, a lot of neuroscience, and so I'm just going to be presenting to you one small perspective. So there are two present-day experts in the field of forgiveness that I want to reference a lot tonight. One is Dr. Fred Luskin, who is the founder of the Forgiveness Project at Stanford. And they have a wide scope in what they do. They work with individuals. They're suffering with a hurt that they can't forgive. They work in groups, but they also go really wide and deep internationally. So they work like with the Catholics and the Protestants in Ireland, with Israel-Palestine. They worked in Rwanda. It's a wide and deep organization. And they also gather information about forgiveness, studies. So Dr. Fred Luskin, and then also I'll be referencing Archbishop Desmond Tutu, who is the primary facilitator of the South African peace and reconciliation process that went on after apartheid. So these are people who have seen intense suffering and also seen the possibility that forgiveness brings for a return or a restoration of well-being. So, first of all, what is it? Dr. Fred Luskin, the first person that I mentioned, defines it as peace, straight up. Mother Teresa defined forgiveness as the highest form of love, which kind of parallels what the Buddha said about forgiveness being the highest virtue. Highest form of love. The Webster Dictionary definition of forgiveness is to give up resentment, to cease to feel resentment against an offense, and to allow room for error or weakness. Which gives us a clue into one of the ways in which we can practice forgiveness, which is to let go of a belief in perfection and allow the world and all of us who dwell in it to be wildly imperfect. Allow room for error or weakness. Give up or cease to feel resentment. One of the energies that the Buddha taught exists in the universe, runs through our bodies as well as out there in the world and through other bodies as well, that causes a lot of suffering is the energy of aversion. And it's resentment, aversion, a wish for retaliation that stops us from pursuing a process of forgiveness. That energy that we're using to protect ourselves is actually creating suffering in our systems. Both that energy of aversion or retaliation and the energy that wants to reconnect to well-being, both of these energies are hardwired in our systems. They're both natural. We feel rage, we feel hate. It's okay, it's natural. It's just that it hurts us. And so learning to put it down and pick up this other energy that's also hardwired, which is the energy of wishing to reconnect, is a skillful choice that we can make. The Buddha likened picking up and holding on to resentment to picking up and holding on to a hot coal. So angry, we're going to throw a hot coal at someone. But as we're holding that anger, it's our own hand that's burning. We put down the hot coal and instead pick up another energy that's also hardwired in our system. The energy of reconnection. And I guess I want to say here too that by reconnection in the process of forgiveness, I do not mean that it is necessary to reconnect with the person who caused harm. What I mean is it's necessary to reconnect with our own well-being. And I'll get to more of that in a minute when I talk about what forgiveness is not. But first I want to talk about why forgive. In careful scientific studies, forgiveness has been shown to reduce depression, increase hopefulness, decrease anger, improve spiritual connection, and increase self-confidence. Research also shows that people who are more forgiving report fewer health and mental problems and fewer physical symptoms of stress. Failure to forgive increases risk for heart disease, high blood pressure, anxiety, insomnia, ulcers, migraines, backaches, and even cancer. Genuine forgiveness lessens the stress that can contribute to or exacerbate these conditions. And what I want to say about that research that I find really interesting is that there are two other energies, again, that exist in the universe and that we can notice, incline toward, and cultivate that have almost identical results. And those are mindfulness and gratitude. I would say that the top three, like, energies that have been studied, I would add a fourth one, which I'll mention, that have been studied that we can actually choose to consciously practice that can increase well-being and that neuroscience backs up are forgiveness, mindfulness, and gratitude. And I would say the fourth, which there's a bunch of research, tons of research happening now about, is compassion. But forgiveness, gratitude, and mindfulness are presently the top three. And we're all here, so we're ahead of the game. But I just wanted to add forgiveness to the mix as you consider what practices are you interested in picking up? What practices are you interested in integrating into your life? So that's one reason why forgive. Another, retaliation doesn't work. This is from Desmond Tutu. Know that what was done to you was wrong, unfair, and undeserved. You are right to be outraged. And it's perfectly normal to want to hurt back when you have been hurt. But hurting back rarely satisfies. We think it will, but it doesn't. If I slap you after you slap me, It does not lessen the sting I feel on my own face, nor does it diminish my sadness that you have slapped me. Retaliation gives at best only momentary respite from our pain. I've noticed, and perhaps you have too, that many of the dear, dear people in my life are so enraged about things that are happening in the wider world. The rage, the hate is justified when we feel that people are being harmed. It's just that it doesn't satisfy what we're wanting it to satisfy. It actually exacerbates our pain. There's often a conflation between rage, hate, and anger with strong boundaries. And what the forgiveness experts teach is that rage and hatred have nothing to do with setting a strong boundary. And in fact, the most compassionate people, the people that have been studied who have the most compassionate livelihoods, are the ones who are the most boundaried. Because you can't actually continue to practice compassion if you're letting people walk all over you. It's really important to have strong, firm, clear boundaries. But you don't need rage for that. You don't need hate for that. Forgiveness is not weakness. It requires courage and strength. This is a quote from Mahatma Gandhi. The weak can never forgive. Forgiveness is the attribute of the strong. Forgiveness is not weakness. Forgiveness is not a subversion of justice. People still live with the consequences of their actions. You can still keep your boundaries. It is possible to completely forgive while still staying physically and emotionally safe. Forgiveness is not, definitely not, forgetting. In fact, it actually requires a fearless remembering and feeling of the hurt. One of the functions of non-forgiveness can be to try to bypass the hurt by going to hate. James Baldwin said, I imagine that one of the reasons people cling to their hate so stubbornly is because they sense once the hate is gone, they will be forced to deal with pain. And forgiveness is not easy or quick. It requires hard work, consistent willingness, and usually several journeys through the process of remembering and grief. Again, it is a process. Remember, I mentioned at the beginning that the word for forgiveness in Pali is kanti, which is also the word for patience, a similar energy. An energy of staying with, even through discomfort, even through stress, even through suffering, an energy of courage and strength, staying with the difficult. Patience, forgiveness. These are some two quotes about forgiveness that have no, they're anonymous. Forgiveness to another says, I love myself more than I dislike your actions towards me. I'm going to read it again. Forgiveness to another says, I love myself more than I dislike your actions toward me. It You see what I'm saying? With a boundary there, I forgive you, I accept you, I offer love, and who primarily benefits from that? Me. My heart gets to rest. There's no more contraction. In fact, the Buddha taught that that state of loving kindness is so essential to well-being. First of all, he equated it with well-being. He says loving kindness is the energy that inclines us to well-being. And he said loving kindness is so important that if you encounter someone who makes you really angry, a really difficult person, consider them a desert and look for the puddles of water. And the puddles of water are the good. Look for the good in the person. Because finding the good in something is the proximate cause for feeling loving kindness. Look for the good. And you're in a vast desert. You see one little muddy puddle. Get down on your hands and knees, the Buddha said, and drink from the muddy puddle of that person's goodness. Why? To take care of the other person? No. Why? To get down on your hands and knees and drink from the muddy puddle of that person's one little goodness you can find. Why? To take care of your own heart. Do you want to live in well-being? It's a worthy practice. You're not submitting to anything. Nobody's got one on you. There's no strength in rage. It's the strong that forgive. And when we think, oh, I am not going to forgive him, you know, he's such a jerk. When we think that way, we're just suffering from innocent misunderstanding. We don't understand that that very attitude is keeping the fire of our suffering alive. Not the other person. Forgiveness to another says, I love myself more than I dislike your actions towards me. And then the second quote is, forgiveness to self says, I love and accept that I am not perfect. It is so wonderful to let the inner critic take a break and kick back and relax and say, I am not perfect. Because guess what? You never were. And the part that's demanding superhuman powers all the time isn't serving us. Forgiveness itself says, I love and accept that I am not perfect. I release regret. And know that now and in the future, I will not repeat the actions which caused me to feel this regret. I can do nothing to bring back yesterday, but this lesson has changed all tomorrows. There's a place for regret. There's a place for remorse. The Buddha talked about this too. These are important internal barometers of our ethics. You feel it. You can feel it physically, especially when you have some momentum with mindfulness. You do something that's outside of your idea of what's appropriate or kind, and your system goes, eh. Or it can be guilt or remorse or regret. If you can find that place where you're not ruminating on it, but learn from it, then it's a wonderful, wise teacher to have in your system. Regret. But just don't let it become an obsessive ruminative thought that's just hurting you all the time. And if it does that, let go of the thought, drop down into your body, and stay with your body. There's a lot of wisdom here. This lesson has changed all tomorrows. I forgive myself, and this lesson has changed all tomorrows. May I have the ability to forgive myself for past stumbles and falls, to correct what I can and accept what I can't, and the courage to try again, this time a bit wiser. So that's the what and the why of forgiveness, and then to speak a tiny bit about how. There's a lot of how out there, and if you're interested, all you do is put forgiveness into your Google bar and you'll find a lot. What I want to offer you tonight is a Buddhist practice around forgiveness. Many of you are familiar with phrase practices. In loving kindness, for instance, the traditional phrases are about wishing self and others safety and happiness or peace and health and ease of well-being. And there are phrase practices for other beautiful energies that we can, that the phrases kind of help us connect to this energy. Loving kindness, there's phrase practices for compassion and for joy, appreciative joy, and for equanimity. So we also have phrases for forgiveness practice. So I'd like to lead you in these phrases. The phrases, there's four groups. There's one in which we ask for forgiveness from others, one in which we offer forgiveness to others, one in which we offer forgiveness to ourselves. And then the fourth one was recently composed by teacher Larry Yang, who is a founding teacher of the East Bay Meditation Center and created the four set of phrases for first responders. But in some way, we're all first responders because life has a way of getting in our face. But he wrote it specifically for first responders, people who are right there with trauma when it's happening. And it's a forgiving life for the suffering that's here. So as I guide us through these phrases, just try them on, see if they work for you. If you like them, there are recorders of these on the internet. You can go to dharmaseed.org and you'll find recordings of these phrases there that you can use to guide your practice. And I want to suggest that with this practice, like with any practice, it's not wise to pick up the heaviest weight at the gym. There may be some people, institutions, situations, or circumstances that were really, really hard or traumatic. I'm guessing in this room there are many that we hold collectively. And no practice serves us if it dysregulates us. The purpose of practice is to bring us into well-being. So if you find any of these phrases to aggravate you a lot, I want to request that you consider opening your eyes if they're closed, look for something beautiful in the room, feel your hands on your legs, and bring yourself back to the present, okay? And choose someone as we go through these phrases that isn't your most difficult one, okay? All right, so eyes closed or partially closed as you prefer. And we begin, just feel your body here in the sitting posture, sensing in particular the places where your body is in contact with the earth. Right now, earth is showing up as your cushion, your zabuton, your chair. Feel that place of contact between your feet and the floor, your legs, back body in the chair, buttocks on the cushion. And it's interesting to reflect that we feel this sensation of contact and weight because of earth. Earth sending up gravity. Earth offering gravity that's holding our bodies down. Bodies are made of all the same substances as earth. They come from earth. They're sustained by earth. They return to earth when they die. Our bodies are truly the children of the earth. And we can feel the earth's connection with us directly right now with our mindfulness, holding us close. And just sense that for a moment. And within your body, locate the direct experience of the rise and fall of breath, perhaps at the abdomen or where it's most predominant for you. Feel the breath moving in and out of your body. As you sit here in a space of mindful awareness, see if you can bring to mind someone to whom you may have caused harm. Again, on a scale of 1 to 10, not the 9s and 10s, but someone in maybe the 3 to 5 range for this practice. Someone to whom you may have caused some harm. And if a being comes to mind, see if you can get a visual image of this being. And letting these words simply flow through you, see if you can offer or send them as they flow towards this being. In any way that I have harmed you, knowingly or unknowingly, by thought, word, or action, I ask forgiveness as much as is possible in this moment. Beautiful, and then just returning to the sense of your body in the sitting posture. Feel that sense of connection to earth. Next, to bring to mind a being that has caused you harm, please don't call up the highest levels, the 9s and 10s. See if you can find someone less intense in the 3 to 5 range on a 1 to 10 scale. If this is possible, see if you can bring a visual image, a felt sense of this being. Let these words move through you. Offer them if you wish to this being. In any way that I have been harmed by you, knowingly or unknowingly, by thought, word, or action, I offer forgiveness as much as is possible in this moment. Let go of that image. Feel your body here in the present. We're going to continue, but if you want to shake out a little bit, let that last one go. It's fine. So the next one is for ourself, from ourself. Allowing our human imperfection as we've steered ourselves as best we can on our own journeys. So feel your body here in the sitting posture. And let the wise part, the mentoring and loving part of yourself offer these into your own system. In any way that I have harmed myself, knowingly or unknowingly, by thought, word, or action, I offer myself forgiveness as much as is possible in this moment. The sense of your body and breath in the here and now. And finally, some phrases offering forgiveness to the difficulties of life. Let these words flow through. However they land for you is totally fine. In any way that I have been unable to be with and respond skillfully to the pain and suffering of our world, my own pain and that of others, may I come to accept pain, suffering, confusion, and ignorance to be part of the journey, my own journey, and the journey of others. I offer forgiveness for the way things are and have been as much as possible in this moment. Thank you for listening and for that doing that practice with me. I really appreciate it. And we have a few minutes if people have any questions or comments for me. Yes, over here. Are you willing to take this? Thank you.
Hello.
Hi.
So you mentioned boundaries.
Yes.
And I was just wondering how best you should, which boundaries to set up and how to know.
How to practice, how to know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mindfulness is a really helpful practice to cultivate because with some momentum of mindfulness, we can become aware, more and more sensitive to when we are in a state of well-being and when we are not. And when we are not in a state of well-being, more and more discerning about what we need to do to bring ourselves back to well-being. And it's interesting, the fourth phrase in the loving-kindness phrase is about ease, and the longer version of that is, may I take care of myself happily and live with the ease of well-being, meaning that there is an equation in ancient Buddhist thought between well-being and self-care. So the self-care is when we have enough awareness to see that we're not in a place of well-being, then secondly, to have some discernment about what's needed. Sometimes it might be boundaries. Somebody might be in our space, or we might be going on, reaching out into somebody else's terrain. And I'll talk more about that in a second. But sometimes it might not be boundaries. Sometimes it might be that we're very depleted with joy and we need to get out into nature and go dancing and read poetry. Or sometimes it might be that we're really needing some self-compassion in a big way and we need to rest and bring in some self-parenting and self-love. If the issue is boundaries, there's two ways in which boundaries can be invaded or either invaded or too open. One is if somebody's coming into our space and they're not welcome. And then a strong no support. I often recommend women to take self-defense class, because learning a physical self-defense helps us learn a verbal self-defense as well. But men often need it too. A verbal no when somebody is encroaching too much, taking too much. Discernment to see that that's happening, and then having a strong, and if a verbal no isn't enough, getting the support around the no. But you've heard that saying, no is a full sentence, and practicing no really strongly, and not being afraid of no, not being afraid of hurting people's feelings with no. Many of us, of all genders, are conditioned to caretake other people's feelings at the expense of our own well-being. We have to unlearn that. But there's a whole other way in which we break boundaries, and we do that ourselves when we are not listening to our systems and we are taking ourselves into a place that lacks well-being. For example, Dr. Andrew Weil, some of you know, an MD who's written a lot of books on alternative health and stuff, recommends taking a news fast. That's not in order to abdicate our cultural or social responsibility. It's in order to get grounded and centered so that we're actually of service rather than just a reactive freak out. Take a fast from the news if that's what our system needs to come back to peace. And then the whole practice of equanimity is a letting go practice where we learn to honor the integrity of other people's journeys even if we think they're making mistakes. So we can bring ourselves out of alignment and break our own boundaries by trying to control other people. We need to allow others the dignity, that's what I'm trying to find, not integrity, the dignity of their own journey. So those are some ways to work with boundaries. Thanks for the question. Yeah, Linda.
So I have a family member that I feel that I'm in I have a family member that I'm feeling constantly in the need. I'm constantly practicing forgiveness with, and there's just no consciousness. And this person doesn't live in this state, but is my brother. So I don't know what to do. I mean, I want to break ties completely. I can forgive. I'm practicing forgiveness a lot, including tonight. But it's, you know, I'm just wondering, like, what, I just don't know what to do. I love him, but I cannot be in relationship with him.
Yeah.
He's constantly doing things and saying things that are so unconscious and hurtful and doesn't even know, has no
mm-hmm.
idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, part of the journey of forgiveness that I didn't talk about a lot tonight, I think I only gave it a passing mention, but it's really important, and I would say, and it's also a very critical part of self-compassion, is to tune in to, first of all, to tune into our shared humanity. I'm not talking about our shared humanity with our difficult family members. I'm talking about our shared humanity with having difficult family members. Like, I would say that's more the norm than any of us realize, that we have, that it's often it's our families that produce the people that are the hardest for us to deal with. So first of all, to understand, I remember when I was in my 20s and appalled by something that was going on in my life and bringing it to a wise Unitarian minister who looked at me as though he were so bored and said, "That is as common as dirt." And I think having a difficult family member just puts you in with us like that, you know, just to remember that you're not alone is really important. And then, you know, the way overused metaphor of the oxygen mask on the airplane. If you haven't heard that, it's where you need to put your own oxygen mask on first before you put it on someone else, as a metaphor for how we need to take care of ourselves before we caretake others. If you're at a place where you need to take a break from someone, that is, can be wise self-care. And sometimes it's less hard on the other person than we fear it will be. I mean, I've often had to forgive myself for not being able to take on the burdens of some of my loved ones. So that's what I would do. Yeah.
First, thank you so much for speaking. I feel like I've learned a lot. You spoke a little bit about what forgiveness is not. Forgiveness is not forgetting. Can you elaborate more on what forgiveness is not? Sometimes I personally feel like maybe I don't know where I'm overstepping my own boundaries with forgiveness.
Mm-hmm.
And knowing what is reasonable for me and what's unreasonable for me. So could you elaborate on that? And thanks in advance.
Yeah. So first I'll just repeat what I had mentioned before just briefly. Forgiveness is not weakness. So if your critic starts slamming you for being in a place of forgiveness, bring to mind the incredible living saints we know who have practiced forgiveness, like Dr. King and Mahatma Gandhi and Desmond Tutu. Forgiveness is an incredibly strong, long, arching act of courage. It's not weak. Forgiveness is not a subversion of justice. If I forgive, there's a man who received a letter bomb and he lost his hand. And he forgave. He forgave his assailant. They became friends. The assailant was caught and put in jail, but the justice was served, but this man healed his heart by forgiving the man who sent the letter bomb. So forgiveness is not a subversion of justice. Forgiveness is not forgetting. In fact, it actually requires a fearless remembering and feeling of the hurt. You can feel when somebody's doing a spiritual bypass around, or you yourself are doing a spiritual bypass around forgiveness. Spiritual bypass meaning using a spiritual term or idea or identity.
Tonight.
So it isn't forgetting. And it isn't easy or quick. I have found that forgiveness is very much of an onion process. I will forgive. I'll be like, yes, I've forgiven. And then, oh no, there it is again. My resentment, my rage. There it is again. This is not a short practice. It's a lifelong practice. Forgiveness is not a relinquishing of our boundaries. And forgiveness, we don't do it in order to be good people. It's selfish. We do it in order to have well-being. Nice byproduct that it makes us good people, but that's actually not the aim. This is a quote. When you release the wrongdoer from the wrong, you allow a malignant tumor in your inner life to vanish. You set a prisoner free, but you discover that the real prisoner was yourself. We have time for maybe one more, or we can... Oh, yes.
Hi, thank you. I just wanted to share that when I think about what helps me forgive is remembering that that person that harmed is suffering. And that's the hardest part, you know, is seeing that it's not necessarily personal, that there's so much conditioning behind the actions that that person has taken.
It's understood in Buddhist practice that when we come together like this and offer our hearts and our minds together in such a way that we generate good energy. It is filling our bodies and the room. And we take this good energy, we offer it to these beings that we just invoked. And we offer it out to the wider world, to beings who could use some good energy tonight, offering the merit of our practice. May the merit of our practice be for the benefit of all beings everywhere, remembering that we too are part of this all being. May all beings everywhere be free.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.